And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And this show is going to be about helping all of you to be a part of the solution by helping you purchase your next high-tech, fast, clean electric car. Not only will we be talking about all the benefits of adopting this cool new technology, but we're going to give you a resource to make the decision about which car to get about as effortless as you can imagine. And we'll be talking to a guest who is expert in this field of EVs, Joel Levin of Plug In America. But first, let me pose a question to all of you Americans from any political party who might be tuned into this show right now. This will be a multiple choice question that assumes that you are in a leadership position in American government, and you've been elected to apply your smarts, your wisdom, to determine our country's future energy needs. And being in that position, you're going to need to vote on two options when it comes to powering our cars, our homes, our lights, our industries. And the vote that's on the table for you to weigh in on is, what's going to be better for the American economy and American jobs now and looking into the future? Option A, electrifying our power grid with clean energy, which means transitioning our power plants from coal, oil, natural gas, to winds, solar, and other forms of renewable energy. And at the same time, electrifying our vehicles and homes to run off this clean energy grid that you've voted in. Option B is investing in and banking America's economy on whale blubber for America's future energy needs. Okay, so what would you choose? Now, if that sounds like a really stupid question to you, that's because it really is. Whale blubber might have been the best option in the 1700s or early 1800s, but it's clearly not a solution to today's problems. And if America were to pour money into that industry, we would be so hurting ourselves, both locally and globally, since among other things, we'd be allowing the rest of the world to capture today's energy growth sectors, which is where the demands lies and where the greatest benefits now and for future generations lie. I'm also going to say that moving to clean energy at this point in history is one of the most important economic decisions we'll make in our society this century. We've spent countless hours on this show outlining this issue over the years, but just this summer, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released their sixth report. This definitive UN report involving 234 scientists as authors, and with 195 governments agreeing on the summary for policymakers, it removes any uncertainty regarding the connection between the now apparent change in our climate and our use of fossil fuels, our agriculture, specifically the world's livestock production, and more. Antonio Guterres, the UN Secretary General, stated that this report must sound a death knell for coal and fossil fuels before they destroy our planet. If we combine forces now, we can avert climate catastrophe. But as the report makes clear, there is no time for delay and no room for excuses, end quote. And the report makes it clear that not taking action on climate change immediately will result in costs down the road that will dwarf the costs of taking action now. So with that said, we're going to now talk about a very important part of the solution that's desperately needed to maintain a stable climate and society for decades and millennia to come. And that is the important shift that's underway in the realm of electric vehicles, or EVs. During the next 45 minutes, we'll be focusing not only on what's best for our planet and our economy, but what's best for you, your bank account, and your quality of life. By the end of this show, I want all of you to have a much clearer picture of the critical and unstoppable role of EVs in the future of transportation. But more importantly, we're going to give all of you, many of whom are more than likely driving a gas-powered vehicle as we speak, information about the really ample resources now available to help you purchase either your first or your next electric vehicle. And as you'll hear, most people who own one now plan on buying another one, because it is the technology of the future. And toward that goal, our guest is an expert when it comes to helping you with that transition. His name is Joel Levin, and he's the executive director of Plug in America, a national consumer voice for electric vehicles in the United States. He's also the chair of the Global EV Drivers Alliance, which links together EV driver associations around the world. And he lives his message, of course, by himself driving a Nissan Leaf, which is mostly charged on his home charging station. So welcome to The Healthy Planet, Joel.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be here.
I'm going to start out by asking you to describe the mission of Plug in America.
Our mission is to advance the rollout of electric vehicles so that we will all be driving on clean, domestically produced power rather than petroleum as we are now.
Now, I have to say that the website for pluginamerica.org is really a wealth of information when it comes to everything from the benefits of choosing to drive an electric vehicle to the how-tos of buying, and we'll get much more into that, to education for consumers about the micro and the macro issues, to training for dealers, and so much more. It's impressive, and I'm going to ask you to go into some detail on some of the resources that Plug in America offers. But before we get into that, let's set the table for our listeners about the benefits of actually owning an electric vehicle that they may or may not be aware of. So please highlight some of the benefits of EVs over gasoline vehicles, including, as is mentioned on your website, affordability, air quality, convenience, environmental stewardship, national security, performance, whatever else you want to throw into the mix.
Yes, it's a long list, actually, and we find that different things resonate for different people. I mean, for starters, there's no tailpipe. You're not breathing all those nasty fumes, and people in your neighborhood are not either. It runs on electricity instead of petroleum, and so there's obviously a dramatically lower carbon footprint, particularly depending on where you get your power. If you've got solar panels on your roof, carbon footprint is for fuel is pretty close to zero. It's a lot more fun to drive for some people. It's all about the zip and the maximum torque that you get from a standstill, which is so different from a gas car. Yeah.
They're quick. So
they're quick. They're fun to drive. It's not just Teslas. They're all zippy. For some people, it's about the convenience with maintenance. A typical gas car has 1,000 plus moving parts that all wear out over time. An EV has something around a dozen parts. It's a very simple, elegant technology. At its core, it's basically just a battery, an electric motor, and a set of wheels. So there's not much to wear out. So there's much lower maintenance. All the things that you think of as normal maintenance with a gas car, you know, your spark plugs and oil changes and all your belts and hoses and stuff, most of those things just come out. So there's very low maintenance. There's the convenience of charging at home rather than going to a gas station. If you don't love the experience of going to a gas station and getting out of your car and getting this dangerous smelly chemical all over your hands, you know, you plug in overnight and every morning you wake up essentially with a full tank. So that's a lot more convenient. So from a consumer perspective, those are kind of the benefits. From a societal perspective, there's also, you know, the money that you spend on fuel, instead of it going halfway around the world to fund the petroleum infrastructure that we've created for ourselves, it goes locally. Electricity is mostly a locally produced fuel with your local utility or with your local solar installer. So there's that benefit as well in terms of economic development, keeping your money at home.
Absolutely. And the thing to keep in mind, everybody, is what happens if you close your garage door, turn on your gas vehicle, and sit in there for listen to some music for an hour? We all know it's deadly. Now, it's not just deadly in your garage. It's deadly everywhere. And you talk about billions of people living on the planet and a very small relative to the size of our planet atmosphere. And you're talking about something that really needs to go. We used the fossil fuels while we needed to. It seemed like a good idea, you know, the 1700s and 1800s and now the 1900s and the early 2000s. It was a good idea, but now the time has come to stop using the deadly mix. There are those who listen to these benefits and they listen to the environmental benefits of EVs over the course of their lifetime and what's called the environmental footprint. And they bring up, you know, if you look really at all the resources to make an electric vehicle, it's not really so good for the environment as the proponents of electric vehicles are saying they are. Respond to that.
Yeah, that's just not the case. If you look at the footprint of building an electric car, yes, the battery takes some minerals that need to be pulled out of earth to create the battery. And yes, electricity is not always perfectly clean. But if you compare that with the massive infrastructure that it takes to produce all that petroleum, particularly over the life of the vehicle, it just doesn't compare at all. If you look, there's been a lot of great reports from a Union of Concerned Scientists that look at the carbon and environmental footprint of EVs relative to gas cars, and it just doesn't compare. I mean, the short answer is it varies a little bit state by state, but in every state of the union, EVs are cleaner than gas cars. In some states, they're a ton cleaner. If you're in somewhere like Washington State, where your electricity mostly comes from hydro, versus if you're a place like Kentucky, where it's mostly from coal. But even in Kentucky, an EV is still cleaner than a gas car.
Right. So we'll put that into the bundle of misinformation that is so rampant. And the other thing to keep in mind is that as dirty or as clean as they are today, they're getting cleaner because our source of electricity is getting cleaner now as we move forward.
That's absolutely right. So most of the new power that's coming onto the grid in the U.S. is from clean sources. So your footprint is getting cleaner every year. You certainly can't say that with a gas car.
Right. So it keeps getting better. Let's talk about the Plug-in America shopping assistant. Now, when I shop for anything, like many of you who are listening, at every stage of my decision-making process, I have questions. Normally, I do an internet search, and that leads to a whole bunch of questions, and I end up doing a whole lot of internet searches. And then the search doesn't necessarily give me a comprehensive answer to what I'm looking for, but it gives me a whole bunch of puzzle pieces that I have to put then back together. And it can be confusing. But this shopping assistant on pluginamerica.org is really good, I found, at anticipating all the questions that a buyer might have. And instead of offering up puzzle pieces, it puts the puzzle together for you almost. It's a web app that guides potential EV buyers or the EV curious through a series of questions in order to zone in on the electric cars that most fit your particular needs. And I have to say that I've never used an electric vehicle shopping tool before, but I was impressed with this one, and I am in the market for an electric vehicle this year. So there's no doubt that this is going to play a big role in my purchase decision. So Joel, describe some of the steps in that process that one encounters when they use the shopping assistant.
Yeah, well, thank you for that great promotion. So it's the shopping assistant, it's plugstar.com. So it's linked from our website. And basically what we found is that most people who buy a new car these days start online. They go to some of the typical car buying websites. They go to websites of some of the auto manufacturers, and they do a lot of research before they ever visit a dealer. Car buying websites that most people typically go to don't really help you if you're looking for an EV. They don't really provide answers to the typical questions that an EV buyer has or that an EV buyer should have, because you have to give it a little bit more thought than with a gas car. With our website, we deliberately started out by asking people some of those questions that they need to be thinking about to figure out what's the best EV for them. How far do you drive on a daily basis? Do you go on long road trips? How often do you go on road trips? Where will you be charging this car? Questions like that, because those things really matter with an EV. And so you need to kind of think through questions like that. Are there two cars in your household? Makes a big difference, because if there are, and you're just going to be using your EV for around town trips, well, you have a ton more flexibility because, for example, one of the big issues with EVs is range. But if this is a car that you're just using to get around town, range doesn't matter for you. If you have another car that you're a gas car that you're planning to use for road trips. So there's a number of questions there that you wouldn't really think about. And so the website asks you all these different things about your lifestyle and how far you drive and where you're going to charge. And then it recommends EVs that are a pretty good fit based on your needs. And then you put in your zip code and it will tell you dealers near you that have been trained and certified to sell those cars. And it also talks about all of the different incentives that you're eligible for. And it turns out there's quite a laundry list of incentives depending on where you live. There is a federal tax credit. There is state incentives or tax credits depending where you live. There are rebates or incentives from your utility, sometimes from your city. And you add all those things together and it can be a lot of money. Depending where you live, it can sometimes be $10,000 or more off your vehicle. But it depends on a lot of nuances. how much money do you make, where you live, things like that. And so the website actually, you can structure it so it'll give you pretty precise information about the incentives you're eligible for, which is pretty helpful.
It is really helpful. And again, you end up with a menu of the cars that all fit your criteria. And then you can look at those and limit your search to that, knowing that someone's thought it through for you instead of you having to know everything about everything.
Right. You know, we're a consumer organization. Our goal is not to sell you a car. Our goal is to give you really good information so that you can make a good decision about an EV and what makes sense for you. So it's a little different than like going to a dealer website where their goal is to like get you to walk out the door with a car. I mean, we hope you buy an EV, but what's more important to us is that you get really educated.
And get the right one. And Plug in America also has a program called Plugstar that trains electric vehicle dealers, which is quite amazing too. So explain how that works and how effective it's been.
So it's been really effective. What we found is that selling an EV is a little bit different than selling a gas car. Generally, when a dealer sells a gas car, they will talk about the features of the vehicle, you go for a ride in it, and then you start talking sort of price and terms and what it would take to get you to buy that car. With an EV, there's a whole other area of discussion that you generally have to have with a dealer or things you want to be educated on. You know, no one ever walks into a dealership and says, where do I find gasoline? And are there different types of gasoline? And how do I get gasoline into the car? And can I, you know, pump gas in the rain? Can I put a gas pump in my house? How does that work? There's a lot of different questions that people have around EVs. There was the whole kind of lifestyle discussion I was just talking about. Is this car a good fit for your specific needs in terms of the range and how fast it charges and things like that? And dealers historically are not equipped to have those conversations. So we do training for dealers that kind of sits on top of the training that they get from the automakers. So they get really good training on the features of the car. So we don't really touch that. They know their business with the features of the car and the financing and all that stuff. But the kind of broader EV environment and EV lifestyle, we spend a lot of time with dealers training them on that. And we provide other resources and support to dealers. And then dealers who meet certain criteria get certified by us. So they're Plugstar certified. So if you go onto plugstar.com and it tells you that there's a particular car that's a good fit for you and you type in your zip code, the dealers who have our certification will be the ones who float to the top that you see first. So it'll show you any dealer who's factory certified to sell that car, but it'll give priority to the ones who've been certified by us. And we found that from the research that we've done, consumers who go to those dealers have a much better buying experience because you're talking to an educated salesperson that really knows their business and knows the question EV consumers are going to ask and can respond to those more effectively.
This is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet radio program on WUSB 90.1 FM in Stony Brook. We're talking to Joel Levin, a leading advocate for electric vehicles, clean energy, and effective climate policies. He's the executive director of Plug in America, a national consumer voice for electric vehicles in the United States. So let's shift away from the personal and talk a little bit about what's going on in the world. I was in China a few years ago, and I saw a report on Chinese TV about wind energy. And one of their wind industry representatives was saying that America under Donald Trump was apparently willing to not play a leadership role in the development of wind energy, instead focusing more on coal and other fossil fuels and taking any opportunity to speak negatively about clean energy. And this representative said that China saw the Trump administration's stance on wind as an opportunity and that they were more than happy to assume a global leadership position in an industry that they saw as having a huge potential. So a couple of years later, in 2020, the United States installed more wind power capacity than any other generating technology, which is a great thing. So that's positive, despite our lack of leadership at the time. But how does that compare to China's 2020 numbers? Well, in 2020, the U.S. installed 17 gigawatts of wind energy. And depending on who you ask, China installed more than three times that much, adding 52 gigawatts or more. So let's bring that back around to electric vehicles. One of the big stories over the past few months has been the infrastructure bill. In Joe Biden's American Jobs Plan, it stated that the U.S. market share of plug-in electric vehicle sales is only one-third the size of the Chinese EV market. And President Biden says that needs to change. So Joel, I'll ask you to outline President Biden's American Jobs Plan in terms of the important steps it takes in securing the future of electric vehicles in America.
Yes, it's a really big deal. He is calling for an investment of $174 billion in EVs over the next decade. And while that sounds like a lot of money, really what that is it's incentives to spur private investment. Because what we're talking about is completely restructuring one of our major industries here, something that is not cheap. We're basically taking everything with an internal combustion engine and replacing it with an electric motor. That's a real reshaping of our industry here. That's a big deal. So that money, some of it is incentives to factories that need to retool. Some of it is incentives to consumers to buy EVs, which is, you know, the federal tax credit right now is $7,500, which sounds like a lot, but it's a relatively small piece of the amount of money that consumers have to spend. So the idea is that you're incenting this private investment. There's a big chunk of it is for charging infrastructure, and that I imagine will be matched with investment also by private industry or cities, states, utilities that, you know, obviously all that is still kind of in play. So it's a lot of money, but it's a down payment that's intended to spur investment in this real complete reshaping of this portion of our society.
And Joel, you commented a couple of months ago about the Biden American Jobs Plan saying, and I quote, "I look at this as a transformational moment for America, like the moon landing in the 1960s. In fact, this investment is about 60% of the cost of the moon landing program in current dollars, but will ultimately more than pay for itself, employ far more people, and have a much more profound impact on American society in terms of our economy, workforce, health, environment, and international relations," end quote. Now, recently we've seen undercover videos released by Greenpeace showing top-level ExxonMobil lobbyists admitting that they've been involved in cover-up of climate science and that these lobbyists are in constant touch with senators, including Joe Manchin, on a weekly basis, actually. They say they call him. And of course, Joe Manchin is pivotal in determining whether climate policy is going to move forward or not. And then, of course, there's still a great deal of climate denial in Congress. We saw Ron Johnson, among the other wise things he says, calling climate change BS. So the atmosphere in Congress is anything but friendly to creating the climate action that we need. And of course, the clock is ticking on climate change. It used to be something that we'd say, we'll see it, 10, 20, 30 years from now. Now we're seeing record wildfires and persistent droughts and 120 degree temperatures in Canada and even in the coldest parts of Siberia, and a record number of named storms, and they're coming earlier than ever before. So with all this said, after watching all of this and seeing the deliberations in Congress over the last couple of months, do you still feel as optimistic about what we might get from this Congress and this administration going forward?
Yes, I'm still pretty optimistic. You're right. You hear that stuff and you think, man, it's just the boiling frog. It's like, at what point do we realize that this is really serious stuff? The secret about EVs that I think will save us and will make it a winning technology at the end of the day is that there's so much about electric technology which is compelling, regardless of where you sit on the political spectrum or what you actually care about. And so I've spent a lot of time on Capitol Hill talking about this issue. And what I found is that when you're speaking to people in different places, you use different language and you talk about different issues, and there's something that resonates for almost everybody. So in some parts of the country, it's all about climate change and you can really focus on that. And that's actually really, really important. But there are plenty of places where people don't care that much about climate change, but they care a lot about local pollution. And so plenty of cities in red states that have, horrific air quality, and that really resonates to people to be driving cars with no tailpipe. There's other parts of the country where it's all about jobs. If you go to Michigan and Ohio, it's about the auto industry. It's like, if we want to be building cars in 20 years, we need to invest heavily in EVs, or we're going to be importing all of our cars from Germany and China because they are investing big time. They're making major investments. There are other places in the country where it's about developing high-tech industry. So Arizona, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina are all states where a lot of EV manufacturing is flowing into those states. And so they may not care that much about climate change on the state level, but they care about jobs and they care about manufacturing and they care about like high-tech industry. And so that really speaks for them. There's other people, including a lot of people on the right, who don't like the idea that we send so much money out of the country to pay for fuel to a lot of countries, you know, who don't particularly like us. And the idea that all those fuel dollars can stay in the US and they can be invested in developing our electric infrastructure and building out charging and building out, you know, wind and solar, that really resonates a lot with people that are more concerned about kind of national security. I think at the end of the day, the sort of politically, the exciting thing about EVs and the reason I think that we will win eventually is that there's kind of something for everybody, regardless of where you sit on the political spectrum. There's something that people find compelling.
And witness the fact that the industry, as well as the clean energy industries, actually survived and thrived under Donald Trump. It could have been better, but it could have been worse. And part of that was because he was only in for one term. But also because there's an underlying demand and an understanding that this is the wave of the future. No one sees coal as the wave of the future anymore, regardless of what politicians say.
Yeah, that's right. It's a strictly on a sort of engineering basis, it's a very compelling technology because you don't have all those moving parts. The cars can last a really long time. They're more intrinsically energy efficient. There's a lot about it that it's very compelling. People like cutting edge technology, even people that don't care much about the environment, they appreciate that this is a technology that's just so compelling on its own. It just makes a lot of sense. You know, electric vehicles have actually been around for a very long time. If you go back 100 plus years before the Model T, electric powered cars were actually the most common way to power cars. There weren't a lot of cars out on the highway then, but it was pretty common before the internal combustion engine. At a certain point, the limitations of them sort of overtook it because back then, and for much of the last 100 years, the problem has been battery technology, that batteries were and have been up until recently, big, clunky, expensive, not very power dense. And so, you know, back in the old days, they were EVs, but they didn't go very far and they were heavy and cumbersome. And that was really the story up until about 10 years ago, about 2010, was that batteries were always the limitation. But we've had really explosive improvements in battery technology. Just that's maybe the wrong word, but battery technology has just been increasing dramatically. So, and that's really why we're here now, because the investments that were made by the federal government and by private industry, to give you an example, since 2010, the cost of 1 kilowatt hour of battery for an EV has dropped about 90%, a little bit more than 90%. So what that means is that you're able to take much more power and put it into a smaller space for less money. And so, you know, a decade ago, EVs went 60, 70, 80 miles on a charge. Now, the newest EVs that are coming out go 250, 300 miles on a charge, and they're cheaper because of the changes in battery technology. And Bloomberg did this great study that said that over the last decade, lithium ion batteries have been getting cheaper and more dense by about 15% a year on average. And they see that continuing into the future and maybe even accelerating. So while EVs have been more expensive than gas cars, if you look out about maybe 3 to 4 years from now, there's going to be price parity where they're the same price as gas cars, and then they get cheaper. And so then you've got these cars that are cheaper to build, cheaper to fuel, cheaper to maintain, better for the environment, more fun to drive. And I mean, you're looking at, you know, kind of a win-win all around. It's pretty compelling.
It is compelling. And that will go beyond what any person in leadership roles might choose to do or not do in the terms of clean energy. So that's hopeful. I'm glad to hear that. And a couple of positive notes are that Plug in America is playing a role in helping to set the national agenda. In January, Plug in America outlined a 2021 federal policy priorities, including calling for President Biden to set a goal of putting a plug on every new car and truck by the end of the decade. And 12 governors then followed your lead. They asked Biden to phase out the sale of any gas-powered vehicles by 2035. Plug in America also recently called for the creation of a White House EV czar and now there is one, the Senior Director for Transportation at the Council on Environmental Quality. That's some pretty positive news related to Plug in America's advocacy.
Yes, we have been really excited by the support from the White House, and we're just really hoping and pushing that that gets converted into legislation, into funding that actually makes things happen. We're part of a global alliance of electric vehicle associations like Plug in America that actually also just recently called for putting a plug on every car by 2030, which is to say by 2030, having every car either be a battery electric or a plug-in hybrid. And there's a UN target globally to have all cars be battery electric, pure electric by 2035, which is, I think, what the governors were calling for, consistent with that.
Fantastic, because it needs to be a global trend. And of course, China needs to be involved just because of the vast number of people they have and the growing vehicles that they're using. In China, how is the EV market going?
The EV market is way ahead of us. They have been investing very heavily. I feel like China has identified a number of technologies where they really want to dominate the world, and they're like very consciously investing money in those technologies. And electric drive is absolutely one of those. I think that their perception is this is a way that they can create a new technology, master it, and export it to everybody else, which is why, you know, we talk to people in, you know, the auto manufacturing states and say, listen, you want to be building cars in 20 years, you need to get on the bandwagon or you're going to lose this whole industry, because they're very, very committed.
Right. Now, it used to be that if you drove a green car, you looked like you were driving a green car. They all looked a particular way, but that's really changed in the last several years. Now there are EVs for all purposes, ages, personalities, budgets. And just today I saw that the Ford Mustang EV won the Car and Driver EV of the Year. And the Ford Mustang is a Ford Mustang. It's not a conservative green-looking car. So talk about what's happening in the EV industry, the plans of manufacturers to transition their lines to EVs, and include the importance of the latest additions to EV lines in recent years, including SUVs and pickup trucks.
Yes. So there's been a trend there that you can see that you're right. The 10 years ago, the first of the modern generation of EVs, they looked like EVs. I think there was some effort to make them look distinctive, and a few people liked those. A lot of people kind of grimaced and said, yeah, that's not for me. But manufacturers have really changed their tune in recent years in trying to make just more really attractive cars that would work for everybody. I think Tesla played a role in that. You know, people don't look at a Tesla. It doesn't look like an Enviro car. It just looks like this, you know, sweet, you know, vehicle. And so the EVs that are coming out now are, you know, really nicely engineered, good looking cars. Early on, because of the limitations of battery technology, they tended to be subcompacts. But there's now a pretty wide variety, and it's growing more rapidly all the time. Again, because of battery technology, you can move a bigger vehicle with a smaller battery than you could 10 years ago. The really big news, and I think this is going to be kind of the big story over the next year or two with EVs, is pickup trucks. That we're at this really exciting moment right now with pickup trucks, because a lot of Americans drive pickup trucks. I have this conversation constantly where people are like, yeah, EV technology is cool, but you know, I have a small business. I drive a pickup truck. You know, what do you got for me? And right now there are not any pickup trucks in the market, but we are really like moments away from all of that changing. There are probably half a dozen different manufacturers that are working frantically on getting pickup trucks into the market. The first one out is Rivian. What's really exciting about pickup trucks to me is because they're large and they carry a big battery, they have capacity to do other stuff as well. That the pickup trucks are mostly going to have plugs all over them, like 110 volt plugs that you can plug other things into it. So if you are a contractor and you work remotely and you want to plug your equipment into your truck and you can use it basically as like a remote battery, you can do that. If you go camping and you've got camping equipment you want to plug in, there's really like a long list of things that you can do with an electric pickup truck. So it's really exciting. I kind of feel like, you remember how when smartphones first came out, they were really like this platform that suddenly allowed you to do all of these really interesting things that no one had ever dreamed of. It's not just a phone without a wall plug. It's a bunch of other stuff you can do. And I think that electric cars, and particularly electric pickup trucks, are kind of going to be like that too. Like, it's this platform that people are going to come up with all this creative stuff that you can do, because suddenly you'll have, you know, abundant electricity remotely, any place you need it. And I think there's going to be a lot of really innovative stuff that comes out of that.
Yeah, I see that. That's very interesting. How much progress is being made toward the recycling of batteries?
So there's a lot of research going into it right now in terms of how to deal with end of life for batteries. Right now, it's unlikely that the batteries will end up in a landfill, because they're expensive, because they've got lithium in them and cobalt and nickel and all these like valuable minerals. Mm-hmm. So it's almost certain that when they're not usable anymore, that people are going to want to recapture those minerals, because it's a lot more expensive than, you know, lead acid batteries, which you don't see in landfills anyway, because there's a whole recycling program around those. So there's a lot of research going on into that. And I think it's very likely people will come up with a solution. There's a few other approaches that people are taking. One of them is to make the batteries last longer. Tesla has said that their goal is to have a 1,000,000-mile battery. One of the major Chinese battery manufacturers as well said, we have the potential to make 1,000,000-mile batteries right now if there's a manufacturer that's willing to step up and take them. And so imagine what that means when you have a, because with an EV, the other parts of the car don't really wear out, I mean, so much. It's really like, other than the battery, it's the brakes and the tires. The rest of the car lasts quite a long time. So if you have an EV with a 1,000,000-mile battery in it, that may be the last car that you buy, you know? So the whole question of what do you do at end of life changes, because a typical car these days goes about 150,000 miles, 200,000 miles. So that's, you know, 5-6 times longer. So that's kind of hard to think about. You're getting this car that you may have this car almost indefinitely. So making the batteries go much longer really changes the whole discussion about end of life. And then another thing that's happening is people are looking at taking the batteries out and using them for power storage. So as we move more towards renewables, towards wind and solar that are not dispatchable, you need more storage on the grid. And so if you've got an EV battery that's only at maybe 60 or 70% of life, it may not work that effectively anymore to power a car, but you fill a warehouse full of them and have a utility use those as backup power, and you charge them when the wind's blowing and then let them release when the wind's not blowing. That could be a great part of the story of having a much more resilient renewable grid.
Absolutely. Yeah, there are so many possibilities. How about used EVs versus new EVs? Do you give anybody advice on that, or is it more just another matter of personal preference and what you're looking for?
Yes, used EVs are generally a great deal. They're sort of one of the unknown secrets of the EV world, because people are so scared about used EVs, with the exception of Teslas, that Teslas completely hold their value. I just saw a thing today that some used Teslas sell for more than new Teslas. So, mm-hmm. But generally, used EVs, people are nervous about them. And so the price of used EVs tends to be pretty low. But in fact, with most used EVs, let me take a step back. As I said before, with an EV, the main thing that wears out over time is the battery, okay? So if you have a used EV and you can have a dealer or someone look at the health of the battery, and if the battery is still in good shape, you've got a good car. You have a reliable car. And all of the other parts that tend to wear out in a used vehicle, much less of an issue with an EV. And yet, the prices of them tend to be pretty low. So there's some great deals on used EVs, because typically when you're buying a used gas car, what happens is you're saving money on the purchase of the car, but you end up spending more money on maintenance and on fuel, because they tend to be kind of less fuel efficient. With an EV, that's not the case. The fuel efficiency doesn't change. The maintenance is not going to be going up, as I talked about. So you can get great deals on used EVs. There's a few of the really older models you have to be careful of, but generally used EVs are really a great option. We have on our website, we have kind of a primer to like what to think about when you buy a used EV. But in a nutshell, it's what I said. It's all about the battery. If the battery's in good shape, it's a good car.
Great. National Electric Drive Week is coming up September 25th to October 3rd. Tell our listeners more about that.
Yes. So we have been doing this since 2011. So we're, you know, over a decade now. National Drive Electric Week is really what we've discovered is that the best way to convince people that to buy an EV or to sort of convert people over to this is, number one, to drive a car. Just spend 10 minutes behind the wheel, get in an EV, punch it, feel that acceleration, feel the smooth, quiet ride, and then to talk to an EV owner and say, what's it really like? You know, do you run out of charge? Is it like driving a golf cart? And as you probably know, EV owners generally love their cars. We did a survey recently. 94% of them said that their next car would be an EV as well.
94%. That's impressive.
Yeah, you won't see that with any other kind of car. So EV drivers love their cars. They love talking about their cars because they all feel like they have this secret that no one else knows about. And so National Drive Electric Week, it's about getting people out to experience the cars themselves and then talk to the drivers and ask them about their experience. So 2019 was the last time we were able to really do a full-fledged event. And we had 325, I think, events over the course of a week across all 50 states and most major cities, put on by hundreds of different partner organizations, cities, car clubs, environmental groups, individual car enthusiasts, utilities, you know, lots and lots of different partners who were putting on these events. So they're practically everywhere. You can, we have a separate website for it. It's driveelectricweek.org. And you can go and see the events that are currently on our national map. More and more will be coming up over time. Like I said, we're, you know, hopefully we'll get at least as many as we had in 2019, which is over 300 events across the country. And it's really the single best place if you want to go and experience a range of EVs. We're not there to sell you a car. We're there to let you experience a bunch of different cars and talk to owners about their experience. So it's a great kind of unique opportunity for people.
Great. And give that website again.
DriveElectricWeek.org, O-R-G.
Great. And what else would you tell people who want to both promote this in the world and promote it in their neighborhoods, at their local dealers? What else can people do other than purchasing a vehicle themselves?
Other than purchasing a vehicle? So if you're a current EV driver, talk to people. You know, I already said EV drivers love doing that, but share your experience with people because everyone's really curious about this. Give people rides in your car. If you're not an EV driver and you're curious about it, I would say that the three things that you could do: visit plugstar.com, and that'll kind of walk you through the purchase process. Go drive a car, test drive a car. If you think it's a golf cart, you're going to be surprised. And talk to people you know who drive an EV. Ask them what they think about it, how they like their experience. If you want to get more into the realm of policy, I would say talk to your mayor, your city council, ask them what they're doing to promote EVs locally. Are they investing in charging in your city? Is there charging at City Hall and at city facilities? There should be. Are they converting city vehicles over to EVs? That's becoming very common now. A lot of cities have commitments that as their old vehicles wear out and they're buying new vehicles, that they're going to buy electric vehicles. On the state level, there's many different states that have purchase incentives. If your state doesn't, you should ask them why they don't. And then on the national level, let your senators and your representatives know that the federal tax credit is a really, really big deal. And the investment in EV infrastructure that Biden is advocating is a big deal. And you want to make sure that those things get passed, that those are important.
Perfect. I want to go back just to one thing that I didn't mention and ask you about. And that is that a lot of workplaces actually have EV charging stations where they provide this charge to their employees for no cost.
Yes. So we are huge fans of workplace charging. It's so important. It's so valuable. So many people, the most common place that people charge is at home. So if you have a single family house and you can park in the driveway, it's super easy. Boom, end of story. That's what most people do. If you live in an apartment, it's a little more complex. Some apartments have charging, a lot of them don't. Retrofitting older buildings with charging is kind of complex. And so for people who can't charge at home, workplace is the next best place to do it. So if you're sitting at work all day for 8 hours, to be able to pull up at work and charge there, whether it's free or even if they charge a little bit, it's very convenient. But even more valuable than that, there's a sort of magical thing that happens in a workplace when they put in charging, which is that this community of drivers just happens. That I've seen this over and over again, where a workplace will put in half a dozen chargers, and in the beginning, there's just one person using them. But within a year, suddenly everybody's buying EVs because they see this charging at work. They notice their friend who is charging. They have to trip over the cord on the way in. Hopefully not. And it builds a community. People start talking about it. More people start using it, particularly people who said, oh, I could never drive an EV because I live in an apartment and we don't have charging at home. Well, you can do it at work. So workplace charging, there's this amazing multiplier effect. Oh gosh, I can't remember the numbers now, but the DOE did this survey that when a workplace puts in charging, the likelihood of someone buying an EV at that workplace goes up by some astronomical number. It really makes a huge difference.
Hmm. And it doesn't cost much for the employer to provide that as a benefit. And it's something that actually will make their employees happy to have that.
Yes, absolutely. It's a benefit. People love it. And many, many utilities will provide support as well, that they'll subsidize the cost of it. So if you're an employer or you manage a building or a workplace, check with your utility. A lot of utilities have grants where they'll finance a big chunk of the cost of installing it. And then the actual cost of charging of providing the electricity, you know, electricity is cheap. Putting the charging in may cost something, but the actual electricity, you know, for most people, if someone's driving 10 or 15 miles to work, it probably doesn't cost more than the coffee that you're giving them. You know, it's not very expensive.
Yeah. So it makes sense on both sides.
And it fits so well with solar panels. You know, it's such a no-brainer for people who have already put solar on their roof to have an electric car. It's like, instead of buying your fuel from halfway around the world, you're growing it on your roof. You know, it's such a compelling logic. Although one tip with it, and I learned about this because I did this the wrong way, is if you're thinking about an EV and solar panels, get the EV first. Or in any case, when you put your panels on, plan on the EV when you size your panels. I made the mistake of doing the opposite. I put in solar, I bought an EV, and then I'm like, oh, I don't have enough solar. So I had to like add on to it later. Don't do that.
Right. Yes. And in fact, we did it the reverse way. We got the solar panels first, but we sized it so that we would have the availability for an EV. So backwards, but I think we've got it, and hoping, you know, once we get there and start putting in the electrical and putting it all together, but we should be in good shape.
Yes. Much better strategy. You want to oversize it so you're prepared for your EV.
Yeah. A very good tip. And yeah, having a solar panel on your roof is like having an electric factory. No more gas stations, no more polluting industries, no more ties to something that is really objectively very dangerous. Joel, anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
This was pretty exhaustive. This was great. You asked some great questions. I see why people listen to this show. This was a lot of fun. I would say watch for the new models coming out. Watch for the new pickups. They're going to be really exciting. Again, if you've never driven an electric car and you think that it's not for you, if you have a buddy who has an EV, ask to go for a ride and you'll be shocked. It's really a lot of fun. It's not like, oh, I've got to buy an electric car. It's like eating my broccoli because it's good for me. There's plenty of people who do it just because it's just a better drive, you know? So
yep.
Leave it with that thought.
And I've experienced that from people who know and have owned electric cars. It's a very different thing and a very positive experience. So Joel, thanks so much for taking the time to inform everybody who's listening about your important work, and even more so for the amazing work that you're doing with Plug in America and on behalf of all of us who breathe.
Thanks. This is great. This was a lot of fun.
All right, good. And this is Bob DiBenedetto with the Healthy Planet Radio Show. We've just been talking to Joel Levin, a leading advocate for electric vehicles, clean energy, and effective climate policies. He's the executive director of Plug in America, a national consumer voice for electric vehicles in the United States. You can find more about Joel and Plug in America by going to pluginamerica.org, pluginamerica.org. And with the archive to this show, we'll be posting a lot of the other links that you provided. So thank you again, Joel.
My pleasure.
We're going to break for a brief message, and we'll be back in 30 seconds.
A stay in the hospital for people of all ages can be a stressful and challenging experience. But every day, teams of volunteers in UCLA's People Animal Connection, or PAC, make the lives of patients and their families better.
You see the patients get happier and more relaxed. They kind of forget that they're in a hospital bed.
The visits are provided to hospitalized patients without cost. Learn how you can get involved at uclahealth.org/PAC.
And before we sign off, I'm going to read some excerpts from an article from The Atlantic on the newest assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that I mentioned earlier. The article is entitled, It's Grim. The latest UN report is clear. Climate change is here. It's a crisis, and it's caused by fossil fuels. A new United Nations-led report from hundreds of climate scientists around the world makes it clear. The human-driven climate crisis is now well underway. Earth is likely hotter now than it has been at any moment since the beginning of the last ice age 125,000 years ago. And the world has warmed 1.1 degrees Celsius, or nearly 2 degrees Fahrenheit, since the Industrial Revolution began. An unprecedented and rapid change, with no parallel in the common era. What's more, the recent spate of horrific heat waves, fire-fueling droughts, and flood-inducing storms that have imperiled the inhabited world are not only typical of global warming, but directly caused by it. Climate change has arrived, in other words, and it will keep getting worse until humanity reduces its greenhouse gas pollution to zero, which can be accomplished only by dethroning oil, coal, and gas as the central energy sources powering the global economy. But the speed of that transition matters, and preventing every last ton of carbon pollution and averting every additional tenth of a degree of warming will not only lessen the harm over the next few decades, but resound for centuries and even millennia to come. These are the conclusions of the newest assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, a UN-sponsored body that has periodically released a synthesis of current climate science since its founding in 1988. The group's reports tend to punctuate the otherwise slow immiseration of climate change. This is its sixth report and its most definitive. The group's findings must be agreed by 195 countries. This famously makes it more conservative than some scientists believe is prudent. But compared with previous reports, there is little restraint here. In the strongest statement of culpability ever, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, declared that humanity is unequivocally responsible for climate change. Gregory Flatto, a vice chair of the group that authored the report and a senior research scientist within the Canadian government, said, quote, in past reports, we've had to make that statement more hesitantly. Now it's a statement of fact, end quote. Some of the worst impacts of climate change can still be avoided. Quote, there are still emissions pathways that would lead us to limiting warming to 1.5 degrees. But they require deep, rapid cuts in greenhouse gas emissions. That leaves a glimmer of optimism that we could limit warming to levels like that. End quote. But it would require much more expedient action from the United States than is contemplated in, say, the bipartisan infrastructure bill that Congress is currently considering. The IPCC report is 3,949 pages long and synthesizes the past 8 years of advances in climate science. Altogether, it cites some 14,000 studies. The bottom line is that climate science and the cataclysm of climate change has lurched into the present tense. Where scientists once warned of disasters in the distant future, now they strive to understand what has already happened and what is too late to save. Here are four takeaways. Number one, climate change is now a fact of modern life, and it will only get worse. Climate change has been happening now, nearly since before it first became a public issue. As the new report notes, quote, each of the last four decades has been successively warmer than any decade that preceded it since 1850, end quote. Yet in the past few years, global warming has moved from a statistical property to an ambient condition of modern life. A mega drought seems to grip the American West without end. A series of wildfires have passed like a baton from one part of the world to another, going from California to the Amazon to Australia to Greece to California again. For the first time, the IPCC report establishes that those extreme events are happening because of climate change. Scientists' ability to attribute individual events to the warming atmosphere is the biggest advance the field has seen in the past decade, Ben Cook, a climate science professor at Columbia University, said. Quote, every inhabited region across the globe has seen a well-documented increase in heat waves, heavy rain or drought, the report says. Human activity is also behind the demise of glaciers since 1990, the hemorrhaging of the Greenland ice sheet, and the decline of snow cover in the Northern Hemisphere since 1950, the report says. No part of the world has been left untouched by humanity's prodigious carbon pollution. The second takeaway from the report is that sea level rise will be worse than once thought and could occur quickly and catastrophically. In the past decade, climate scientists have arrived at more pessimistic views about sea level rise, and those views are reflected in this report. Most researchers now believe that the oceans will rise roughly half a foot more than once projected. In a relatively optimistic intermediate emission scenario, for instance, the IPCC once projected that oceans would rise about 1.5 feet by 2100. The new report finds that just under 2 feet is more likely, and 2.5 feet is not out of the question. The authors could not eliminate from their models the small chance that some of the largest glaciers in West Antarctica could catastrophically collapse this century. In that scenario, humanity could see more than 6.5 feet of sea level rise by 2100, and perhaps as much as 16 feet of sea level rise by 2150. The third takeaway from the IPCC report: sea level rise is also essentially irreversible. If humanity successfully learns how to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, some of the impacts of climate change, such as ocean acidification and the rise in land temperatures, may be reversible, but some will not. Sea level rise is chief among them. Kim Cobb, a climate scientist at Georgia Tech and a co-author of the report, said, "Once you have melting underway, it's very hard to rein it in, even if you go full scale into reversal of global warming. The slow increase in sea levels could continue for millennia." Cobb said, "When I say those words, it almost chokes me up. It scares the crap out of me, frankly. This is a horrific, long-term consequence to the decisions that we'll be making this decade on our watch." The fourth takeaway from the IPCC report is that climate change is now happening on political time. Current policies suggest that the planet is set for 3 degrees Celsius or more than 5 degrees Fahrenheit of warming by the end of the century. Cook said, "We're already seeing extreme rainfall, heat waves, and droughts that are all implicitly or explicitly tied to climate change. And this is just a 1-degree world. I would not want to live in a 4-degree world, and a 3-degree world would be quite challenging." That was an article this week from The Atlantic, written by Robinson Meyer. And that's all we have time for this week. This is Bob DiBenedetto on The Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM, Stony Brook, New York. I'll be with you again at the same time. That's right, the first 2 Fridays of the month at 6 p.m. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to Natural Alternatives and The Healthy Planet shows every week at this time with great hosts sharing cutting-edge health and environmental information. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more info on Healthy Planet and our radio shows, and if you're interested in having me do a virtual presentation to your school or group, visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org or email us to join our mailing list at info@healthyplanetusa.org. Also, like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right, even if the political climate is challenging. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four-legged friends, and enjoy this beautiful world that we all share.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.
Happy holidays to all, and we'll see you in the new year. Good night.